episode 33.
33, that's a magic number. You will obey. In the morning.
Shut up, slave.
The 11th. Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
What is happening? You like that beat? I like that beat. That bass hits hard. I like it. Yeah, it's a little bit of a switch up intro. Closed Network Podcast, Privacy Security Today, Bitcoin Podcast, episode number 33. Recorded today, April 27th, 2024. Not gonna give you my FEMA region. It'd be bad OPSEC. I'm just kidding. I think most of you know I'm in the West, in the US of A, which has been under attack this week. And that's what we're going to talk about. Oh, that hook. Okay, a lot of you probably are not like techno trance people, rave people. I can respect that, but there's something about that track that it just really like gets me amped, gets me fired up, gets me ready to start talking into the microphone. And I'm hyped for it. I'm jazzed for it. And this is going to be a lot of what I'm going to talk about today for those that are in the Bitcoin, I'm using air quotes, Bitcoin crypto space. There's been a lot that has happened in the last 2 weeks, especially in the last few days, including even what's happening today even. And that's what I'm going to talk mostly about. I've mentioned several times in the podcast to use mixing services that where you run your own node, like specifically Whirlpool running on a Dojo node, and using a Samurai wallet on your Android phone. Well, those guys, the developers, have been arrested. So we're gonna go into that. We're gonna go into some other like the ripple effects from that. I've been in Twitter Spaces several hours this week, both listening and also on the panel. So there's a lot to glean from that and what it means to us. Because even if you're not into Bitcoin or you're not an active Bitcoin user, maybe you have a little, maybe you have zero. I don't want you to tune out because you think, oh, okay, he's just going to talk about Bitcoin stuff. I don't really care. I'm also going to talk about Section 702 a little bit later in the show. If you're in the United States, most of this is very much impactful to you. If you're outside the United States, a lot of the things that are happening in the Bitcoin world, in the US, may not directly impact you today, but may impact you soon and will also impact the network, liquidity, and things of that nature. So I'm also going to talk about my experience with Anon Shop, which I mentioned on my last episode, purchasing a new IBM ThinkPad X1 Carbon, fully decked, purchased with Monero anonymously as possible, using anonshop.app. We've launched a new forum. We're experimenting with Simple X, as well as some merch ideas to help support the podcast and kind of giving value for value, because this is a value for value podcast, meaning I don't have any interest or plan to do any sponsorships, advertisements, any of that stuff. It is all solely supported by you all. When I say you all, you know who you are. You know who you are. And I'm going to give a quick shout out to those people, whether you like it or not, because I am going to express my gratitude. And then what can I get into the show? So it's going to be Samurai Wallet, my anonymous shopping experience, some Section 702. By the way, the clips in the beginning of this episode were stolen. I stole them. I have a right to use them as a contributing producer to the No Agenda podcast, which is one of my favorite podcasts of all time. I've been listening for about 11 years now. And as a producer, as a contributing producer, meaning finding they're a value for value, I am at liberty to use their clips. That's where those came from. And I thought they were kind of funny because there's some mystical, magical features about the number 33. This being the 33rd episode, I thought that would be kind of entertaining. So I'm not going to get into all of that at the moment because that's not what this episode is about, but I'm just giving some homage because I know there's some other No Agenda listeners that listen to my podcast, and I just want to give the ITM in the morning shut up slave to you, and I appreciate any support that you all have provided. So starting with our privacy badass contributors from Patreon, Michael Bates, Richard G., always coming in clutch and super appreciate that. I'm actually going to start doing smaller podcast like episodes. They're not going to be full blown, like an hour or two type long or interviews, but they're just going to be news updates or things that maybe just don't really warrant a whole episode on. I'm going to do those over on the Patreon page. I will make them available to anyone. You don't have to pay to be a member. You can just be a member. You can sign up with an email alias. You don't have to give any real information. If you do want to financially support via Patreon, then you would be KYCing yourself, but with Patreon, not with me, not with anything that I would have access to. But I respect the people that say I don't want to do that. There are other ways to contribute via podcasting 2.0 apps like Fountain and some others. I know Fountain is an open source. Probably Podverse and Intonopod are probably what people would use. But I like Fountain because it allows me to engage with podcasters I listen to, comment on their episodes, clip episodes, and easily send value via Lightning Network. That's the Bitcoin Lightning Network. And my podcast is also on there. So I want to give thanks to Bon, who's always consistent. I appreciate that. We shared some comments back and forth over the last couple of weeks. Wartime. Second top contributor, third Circus Media, Lumor, 02ZX, and Seabass. There are some others as well that I haven't been able to capture in the last week. I really appreciate that. Those are people who are using a Podcast 2.0 app. It has a Lightning wallet. They put some sats in there, and then they can boost sats to their favorite creators. Wavelake is a really cool app that I've been using. It's also on the Lightning Network. These are musicians who create music. You can freely listen to them. You can download the app. You can connect it to your GetAlbi wallet. GetAlbi is a really cool, simple Lightning wallet that you can install as an extension in your browser. You can connect it to Nostr and Wavelake and all these different things with that extension to send value to creators directly as opposed through an intermediary. And I really like that circular economy. It's one that I'm embracing as a long-term purchaser, miner within the space. I like participating in the ecosystem of using and acquiring and mining and all of that. So thank you. And last but not least, I want to give a big shout out to our community moderators. Water Turkey is a new moderator who I'll talk about in just a second, but Unintelligent 7, I think you go by 7 now. I think you're kind of switching things up. I see what you're doing there. Or Super Intelligent 7. Yeah, he goes by different monikers. And then Mattis Max, also just super helpful. They've both I could not do the things that I do without their help. We did successfully move the Mastodon server over to my domicile, so it's physically hosted on premises, embracing that hashtag self-host ethos. And Unintelligent 7 really did all the work. We sat on a Jitsi call together, and I just sat there and kind of like was Googling stuff and errors and things, and he did all the work. So when I say I couldn't do it without some of these key individuals, I'm not like exaggerating in it at all, both from financial support, moral support, checking on things, helping me with infrastructure. So this podcast, the community, the different tools that we're deploying, I can't do it all on my own. I just can't. So I really, really appreciate all of that help. And getting to Water Turkey, we just launched our forum in the last 2 weeks. For a long time, I've battled with trying to figure out where to put information, tutorials and guides, references, show notes, things of that nature. The website is my main hub. That's closednetwork.io. But I didn't want to do all of the tutorials and guides there. Initially, I thought that's what I might do. And that turned out to be kind of like constrictive because I want other people to just be able to write and contribute with very little friction. And we've been talking about this for quite a while now, you know, within the community. And we decided, okay, let's do it. We picked Discourse, which is an open source platform, and it allows everyone to easily come to the website. You don't have to log in. You don't have to create an account. But if you do create an account, you can also communicate with me and others. We kind of have a chat there. So we're kind of getting chats going on all over the place, and it's sometimes hard to keep track of. But at the same time, I kind of like experimenting and seeing what works for people. And so this forum is available to all. You don't have to sign up to read it, but you would if you want to comment or write a guide or tutorial. I don't care what you sign up with. I love seeing email aliases and Proton and Tuda emails and all that stuff. So we're not in the space to try to collect or harness any information. Again, value for value. If you find value, contribute. Maybe that's writing some tutorials and guides. We have got some excellent guides in there already that I've written and others have written. And Mattis Max, Superintelligence 7/Unintelligent 7 and Water Turkey are helping moderate that. So I'm hoping to see that grow and flourish and become a really useful hub for people that are looking for information. They can ask a question and someone can come back and reply to it, whether it's regarding GrapheneOS, self-hosting, Bitcoin, books. We're going to be doing recipes. I mean, it's all over the place, but there's a big, heavy emphasis on privacy. So a lot of like privacy tools, methods, techniques, what works in different countries. I have a lot of interaction with people in India. And looking at the stats for the podcast, it's, you know, I always thought, oh, America's probably one of the biggest, North America, right? Canada and stuff. Nope. I mean, it's actually definitely the largest percentage-wise by like 42%, but it's a big global audience that we are participating with and in conversations from all over the place. Israel and India and the US, obviously, and many other countries where we're talking all the time. And so a lot of the tools that I talk about might be available in North America, but they're not in other countries. VPN services, mobile phone services, carriers. Do you have to KYC? Can you not KYC? All these different things. So again, this is a good place for all of those people to connect and share. We do have the Matrix channel. And the Matrix channel is a stream of consciousness. So when you come in, there's multiple topics. It's kind of just a live chat, and it'll remain. I don't have any plans to bring it down anytime in the future. We have a main channel and an off-topic channel. We also now just started a Simple X chat group, mainly for testing, but maybe that could become a primary place where we have conversations, because a lot of us are looking at different communication platforms and applications to use outside of Signal, and so Simple X is. For me, that's kind of what I'm leaning towards. I know there's others. There's Session and all, you know, Threema and different apps. But for me, I like SimpleX because you can have multiple identity profiles. You can have run your own server and connect to it via Tor. It's self-hostable, and so those are keys for me. I can't self-host my own Signal server. I can't self-host my own Session server where all of my data is being relayed through over Tor and Tor only through that particular server. So there's a reason why I've kind of been leaning to SimpleX as far as like my long-term potential main communication application. So we're testing that in the community. Let's figure some stuff out. Finally got this group working because the original one that I had set up was set up over Tor. So if you weren't on Tor, you couldn't connect to it, which a lot of people are on iPhones and you can't install Orbot and tell it which apps to tunnel through Tor and all that stuff. So I recreated it, and so far so good. It seems to be working out pretty well. The link to that will be in the show notes. The show notes will also be on the forum. So if the show notes suck, like you can't click on links in the show notes in the app that you're listening to, head over to the forum and just click on the podcast show notes and just go to the episode and boom, all the links will be there. Super easy. It's incredibly mobile friendly as well. It kind of works like a progressive web app on your phone, and you can get right to where you want, click all the links you want to get to, because I know that sometimes it's all in plain text and that kind of sucks. So Yeah, so I think that's pretty much all of the housekeeping stuff. If you want to connect with me directly, you can hit me up on Mastodon, which we self-host, Noster, which is kind of like where I'm moving to, but still on Twitter as well. You can also always email me, simon@closednetwork.io. For those that email me, I get probably 2 to 4 emails a week asking if you can be on the podcast. I really enjoy having guests on, but a lot of the requests, and I post them in the chat quite often. Actually, just this past week, I got solicited to have the Wasabi guys on, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm not a big Wasabi fan. There are a lot of self-promoters. I don't have a problem with promoting something that I believe is aligned with our objectives, but I'm also not going to just bring people on to talk about their book. I have no interest in doing that. So I either don't respond, or I respond and just say thanks, but no thanks, not to be mean, but that's not really, I'm not interested in shilling anything to listeners, to the audience, because no, I'm only shilling myself. You should only be buying me, right? You can contribute to me directly on the Lightning Network, closednetwork@getlb.com. You can also load up sats in your favorite podcast 2.0 and stream those sats to me, boost them to me, and I will love you forever. I'll hug you. I'll kiss you on the cheek, your forehead. I'll pretty much do anything for money, if you know what I mean. So I appreciate the people who are trying to reach out on the podcast, but sorry, most of it's a no-go. So my Noster, Twitter, Mastodon, my email, all of that's going to be in the show notes as well. So you can pop right over to the forum. By the way, just go to closednetwork.io. You can get to the forum. You can get to the Mastodon. You can get to Matrix. You can get to everywhere from just literally, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. You go to closednetwork.io and all the main links are right there. And you can get to the show notes. The show notes will have all the links. So I'm trying to get a little bit more streamlined by episode 33 here, putting in a little bit more production quality into the podcast. So before I get into this Bitcoin news and what's going on, I do want to mention that, well, not mention, but I want to follow up with my AnonShop.app experience. I mentioned that I wanted a new laptop, but I didn't want to buy it through Amazon. I could have gone into a store and paid for it in cash, sure. But I want to try these services out. I want to see how they work. I want to understand, is it something I can recommend? And so that was why I was like, okay, cool. Now's the time to try this AnonShop.app. I pasted in the product that I wanted to purchase, and then I paid for it with Monero. I selected an Amazon locker near where I live, and I would follow up with the order by logging into the website with a 8-word mnemonic seed phrase, kind of like similar to a Bitcoin wallet. So there's no email address. They don't actually ever send me anything. I have to come back to the website and just randomly check. They posted the tracking number and when to expect the laptop to arrive. Everything went super smooth and they were very responsive. And I will use them again as long as they're around. and we'll get into that in just a little bit. Not just them, but are they a money service business? Is the transfer business is the question, and that's what we're going to get into with the big news of the week. So I don't really have a whole lot of the stuff to say about the experience other than it was good. It was easy. It was frictionless. There was good communication. It was as advertised. The fees, depending upon what you're buying, can be a little high. So you have to take that into account. When I say the fees, it's kind of like their whole fee because they are purchasing it and then they're receiving it, then they're resending it or they're directing where it goes from. They have different methods that you can do. So it's not a cheap service to use, but if you definitely want to avoid having any ties, transactional ties to to really anything, but it's maybe say it's a phone, you want to upgrade your phone and you don't want that transaction tied to you and you'd like to purchase it with Monero because that's all they accept, then I would highly recommend it. And I'm going to try it again when I eventually upgrade my Pixel 7 Pro, which has still been a trusty phone, to maybe the 8 or the 9 or the 20, whatever comes out next. I installed CubesOS. I was running CubesOS on the ThinkPad. That's what I wanted to run. And I had some issues because I was on a podcast and I needed to use my Zoom PodTrack P4 with that is my mic input and my output for my headphones, and it couldn't get it working. And I did find out why, because we have some great Cubes tutorials that are happening on the forum. But in a fit of panic, I just installed Arch Linux and then used it when I needed to. It's still currently running Arch at the moment, but I am going back to Cubes because I do really want to understand how to be as most secure as possible. And CubesOS is the best operating system out there that is built from the ground up with security in mind. And I want to be more familiar with using it and try to embrace the idea of using it as my primary OS on my laptop. It's just going to take me a minute. So, but that is my goal. That's what I'm trying to work on. And that's what I want to do. So, getting into the Bitcoin news, I don't know how much you have been listening or following the news regarding the Samurai wallet developers. So this on April 24th, just a few days ago, the Department of Justice charged and arrested both the Samurai wallet founders, Keon Rodriguez and William Longren Hill, with conspiracy to commit money laundering. And I think also, too, there's another charge to like unlawful transactions or conducting a money transfer business, money services business. So in the US, if there's different types of licenses you need if you're going to be an air quotes money transfer service or a money service business. There's MTLs, which is the money transfer license, which is a state by state license, and these can be very, very challenging to get, especially like in California and New York. I know they're almost impossible to get. So these are required if you're like an exchange or a bank of any kind, or you're accepting funds and you're managing and you're a custodian for funds. Then there's the MSB, which is more of like a federal license. Now, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an expert, but I'm just kind of generalizing here to kind of just paint like what they're being charged with and why. The money laundering is because they, you know, had the coordinator for allowing users to mix transactions with each other by broadcasting basically secret notes to each other, which is how Bitcoin works. But we're going to kind of discuss that a little bit further. I'm just going to kind of glean through this. So federal prosecutors charged Samurai wallet founders Keon Rodriguez and William Longren Hill with conspiracy to commit money laundering on Wednesday. So that was just a few days ago, as the U.S. government continues to approach the prosecuting crypto mixing tools that may be used by illicit actors and foreign governments to hide fund transfers. And it says, according to the press release, which I'll have a link to all of this in the show notes, issued Wednesday, the pair developed, marketed, and operated the mixer, which, air quotes, facilitated more than $100 million in money laundering transactions from illegal dark web markets. Samurai overall facilitated around $2 billion in unlawful transactions between 2015 and the present. The release alleged. So this is to the press release. An accompanying indictment said the figure was calculated by converting the value of Bitcoin laundered through the funds to U.S. dollars based on Bitcoin's price at the time of each transaction. So Rodriguez, who's 35, and then Hill, who's 65, collected approximately $4.5 million in fees for their mixing services, according to prosecutors. Different features had different pool fees, according to the indictment. And that's true. There were different pool fees depending upon how much you were depositing. And they were usually like 0.01, 0.1. You know, they're in different volumes because they had to match exactly. And I'll talk about why those fees were there to begin with. So they're, you know, the pair is charged with conspiracy to commit money laundering and conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitting business. The charges carry a maximum sentence of 20 years and 5 years, respectively. So Rodriguez was arrested on Wednesday morning, and he'll be arraigned in Pennsylvania it probably already happened. And then, you know, according to the press release, Hill, the CTO for Samurai Wallet, was arrested on Wednesday morning in Portugal and will be extradited to the U.S. So I would imagine he's on his way or maybe here now. The Samurai website, which was hosted in Iceland, was also seized and taken down. It had that, you know, nasty takedown notice that everyone's probably seen screenshots of when darknet markets get taken down. And a seizure warrant was issued for the mobile application, so it was pulled from the Google Play Store. It was only available on Android, so it was not on the iOS App Store. It was just on Google Play. They also took down their GitHub and all of that stuff. This was all kind of happened at the same within the same few hours, or definitely within the same day, because when I went to the website, it was down. Samurai has been in development since 2015, and the Department of Justice press release said that Rodriguez and Hill encouraged and openly invited users to launder criminal proceeds. No, but that's what they're saying. So through a mixer, the press release said they were citing tweets from years ago and private messages that the mobile application had seen more than 100,000 downloads. So and this is kind of what they quoted: "At Samurai Wallet, we are entirely focused on the censorship resistance and /gray circular economy." One private message attributed to Hill said, "This implies no foreseeable mass adoption, although /gray markets have already started to expand during COVID and will continue to do post COVID." So, yes, they actually had, they were trolls, man. The way I look at it is like they were trolls. They definitely said a lot of stupid stuff on Twitter, but most people on Twitter say stupid stuff and post memes, anti-government, anti-three-letter agency, a lot of that stuff. So yes, they're the ones that are being indicted and arraigned and they're under the spotlight right now. But they're using communications from the past to paint their motives for what they've been doing. And yes, these mixing services, and I'm going to talk about why they're important here in a second. These mixing services are built in a decentralized fashion, in this case, mostly decentralized, but decentralized in the sense that they can't prohibit certain people from using their service and allowing others. Wasabi Wallet does do that. And that's because they are cooperative with chain analysis software to check the UTXOs, to check the XPub of the wallets of what's, you know, against a blacklist to give a yes or no whether or not they can use their mixing service. So they're compliant in that regard, but also too that implies that they're logging and checking every inbound transaction, and they're comparing it to a blacklist. So you can't really have a truly private method, a decentralized network to provide the service and also add layers of censorship. They can't really coexist. I mean, some people will argue that they can, and that's when you introduce monitoring, surveillance, backdoor. I mean, you're looking at the transactions and you're comparing it against a list. And we all love lists, right? So the second part of this that really concerns me is they're basically being charged for money laundering, but they never. So the way Samurai Wallet works is the way it should be used is you have a Samurai Wallet on your phone and you connect to your own node. You run a full node on your network. It connects over Tor, and then it allows you to add whatever increment of funds you want to mix. So you're essentially sending transactions to yourself. You're never sending it to them or anyone else in the pool, the other four members in the pool. And so everyone's sending transactions to themselves, right? And broadcasting these messages. And what you're trying to do is break the linkability of the Bitcoin that went into it and what comes out of it. Why would you want to do that? Because if you purchase Bitcoin from a traditional exchange like Strike or Coinbase or Gemini or any number of exchanges that have regulatory compliances, then the moment you make that purchase, it's deposited to that wallet, your custodial wallet with them, So meaning you don't own the private keys to it, they do. So when you send it out to your wallet, a chain of custody has been created. And that chain will follow till the end of time. So by mixing, it doesn't break the history of those transactions. What you're trying to do is break the surveillance of transactions going forward once it's moved out of the pool and into a different wallet. You wouldn't want to send it back to the same wallet. You know what I mean? You're kind of creating this flow. And I've participated in three or four different Twitter spaces, one that was almost 5 hours long. It was talking on three of the five, because a lot what I hear from the community, what I understand, but also disagree with, is like, well, why are you mixing? Why this is laundering? It's not laundering, number one, because you never were out of custody of your own funds. You always maintain the integrity of the private keys for those funds, and you can take them out at any time. So there was nothing transmitted to them. There was nothing being transmitted out. There was a pool fee to enter the pool so that every transaction would align perfectly. So imagine if you were sitting around a room and it cost $1.05 US to put your dollar bills into this, you keep your hand on it because you're not giving it to anybody. Like, you're maintaining control. You're breaking the metadata, you know, for what's going when it comes out. And you pay a nickel to do that, right? So everyone has to come in with an even denominator or the exact same amount, because you're pulling the exact same amount back out. And so it's kind of hard to explain in that way, because there's meta information. These are digital transactions. So the question I heard, or the comments I heard a lot in the Twitter spaces, were like, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. That's, kind of shady to be doing mixing. I'm like, no, it's not. Actually, as a pro-privacy advocate, you absolutely need these types of services, because the Bitcoin blockchain is transparent. So if you have a wallet and you pay for something on chain, the receiver of that funds can now look at your wallet, see your fund balance, see every transaction you've made before that transaction, and they have total insight into your financial wealth. So how would you break that? There's no other way to do that without breaking off pieces. You can mix it, which is the same thing as, hey, going to the grocery store, buying a pack of gum to break a 20. In a sense, right? Where you're like, I need smaller denominations to spend these, so I'm not paying everyone with a $100 bill or paying them with $1,000 or $1,000,000. You know, you don't, it's also, I used the scenario of, oftentimes when I am in cities, big cities, where there's a lot of people, maybe there's a higher threat level for crime, and you're using cash because maybe you're going to dinners and clubs and bars and whatever. Do you always want to pull your wallet out of your back pocket? Or, you know, for me, I always carry my wallet in my front left pocket. But if I'm in a situation where I'm going to be using cash a lot, like I'm at a beach and we're going back to the beach bar or whatever it is, I don't want to pull my wallet out, pull all of my cash out to pay for something, because now I'm exposing a lot of information to the people around me. How much cash I have on me at that moment, what other information I might have, like gleaning info from my ID or what credit cards I might have. Normally what I would do is, if I was going out for the night, I might have $60 in cash in my right pocket. And when I'm buying a beer, or when I'm, you know, buying something or whatever, or even like a flea market or anything where you're around a lot of people and I don't want to expose my wallet and how much money I have in there, I would move cash to my right pocket. If I'm in an airport and I'm buying a bottle of water and a pack of chips or something like that before I get on the plane, I will do this. I will just have cash in my right pocket and pull it out and just pay for it. And it's usually smaller denominations and stuff, you know, smaller bills. So I'm concealing my larger balance in my wallet, in my front pocket, and I've kind of taken a small amount out of there and moved it to my right. So as I'm paying for stuff, that's all people can see. If someone wanted to hold me up, I could also be like, hey, here's my money, man. Sorry, I don't, you know, here's all my cash, and they're out. I'm saying there's a lot of reasons why you would do this, because if you send a Bitcoin transaction to someone from your one wallet where your entire stack is, now your entire stack is exposed. And if you're purchasing something with an address, with your physical address, like you're buying something from Newegg.com or something like that, a lot of these places take Bitcoin. Now they have your name, your address, and they can see your entire financial stack. That's why, right? That's why these mixing services are so vital. And that's why I've been using Samurai Wallet and Dojo with Whirlpool running on a Dojo server in my domain since the beginning I've used it, because it allows me to do that. I can now take, you know, whatever comes out of there, send it to a fresh wallet, and that's the wallet I use to make purchases, to fund Lightning, to do contributions, to donate to my favorite projects like Graphene OS and other open source projects. Yes, I also use Monero, but in this context, we're talking about Bitcoin. Well, all of those places where I'm doing that, if it's their on-chain transactions, they can just reverse look up my address and look at what I've got in there. I don't want that. So I want to create silos. This is, again, goes back to compartmentalization. We talk a lot about having different phones, different laptops to do different activities and tasks so they're not crossing each other. Well, that's really hard to do with Bitcoin to maintain your privacy if you don't have a system in place to break the chain going forward of the history of those transactions. And that's what that's about. That's why these things are important. And there's other mixing services and wallets. One of the ones, and we're going to get to this in a minute, with Tornado Cash, but Wasabi, you know, has also been doing that. Well, a lot of these just in the last 24 to 72 hours have pulled all their apps off the marketplace and are shutting down access to the US. And we're going to kind of get into that, because the charges that are coming in Samurai Wallet are for money laundering and acting as a money transfer business, transmittal business, which is also weird because Bitcoin itself has been defined as property, not currency. And FinCEN in 2019 also said that wasn't a money transfer business to be transmitting funds and doing these different things. Although I know they're saying, well, FinCEN isn't a lawmaker, you know, we can kind of do what we want. So a lot of the news I'm going to be talking about, and a lot of things I'm talking about right now, are going to imply that Bitcoin is a security, a currency, and a commodity or an asset, property, all at the same time. And it can't. And they're all taxed differently, because property is, and assets are taxed by capital gains tax. And then you have currency, and which is, if it's cash, is taxed differently how you're receiving it. There's these weird and then if you're sending it, you also need a license to send it to yourself, to send it to anybody. And ultimately, you know, spoiler alert, from what I see, the end goal here is to ban or make it illegal or very difficult to use non-custodial wallets. A non-custodial wallet is a wallet that you have and that is installed and you have assets in, and you are the only one that holds the keys to it, versus a custodial wallet, which would be your Bitcoin wallet with Coinbase or BTC Pay, or not BTC Pay, but like, what the hell's the name? Whatever. Any exchange, essentially. Gemini or BitPay, that's what I was trying to think of. Anywhere where you have KYC'd yourself by sending your identification, giving them your name, social security number, date of birth, all that fun stuff. Wallets hosted with those are custodial wallets. Non-custodial is where you are in charge of your private keys and you alone. They want to... So let's go back to it before I just start tangenting off. So the Samurai Wallet developers are arrested. The following day, literally the following day, the FBI puts out a public service announcement, alert number I-042524-PSA, dated April 25th, so 2 days ago. And I'm going to read this. The FBI warns Americans against using cryptocurrency money transmitting services that are not registered as money service businesses, or an MSB. According to United States federal law, and it cites the section of law, and do not adhere to anti-money laundering requirements. A few simple steps can prevent unintentional use of non-compliant services. For example, avoid cryptocurrency money transferring services that do not collect know your customer KYC information from customers when required. The MSB registration says the FBI has recently conducted law enforcement operations against cryptocurrency services, aka Samurai Wallet, which were not licensed in accordance with federal law. So this also, by the way, implies that Bitcoin is money now, currency, right? That's why I'm making a point about that. And it says, people who use an unlicensed cryptocurrency money transmitting service may encounter financial disruptions during law enforcement actions, especially if their cryptocurrency is intermingled with funds obtained through illegal means, which it wasn't. Risky services. This is the next section. This is the one that kind of really stood out to me. This and the tips to protect yourself. Cryptocurrency money transmitting services that purposely break the law or knowingly facilitate, which, by the way, what law? Where was this law created? They didn't reference that at all. But, you know, break the law or knowingly facilitate illegal transactions will be investigated by law enforcement. Using a service that does not comply with its legal obligations may put you at risk of losing access to funds after law enforcement operations target those businesses. Okay, so far we're thinking like just the people, the businesses you operate. Well, let's get into what is a business or what does this actually mean? And they say before using a money transmitting service, check whether it is registered as an MSB. Like, how the hell do you do that? With the U.S. Treasury Department Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. That's what FinCEN is. FinCEN provides a website where anyone can check whether a company is registered, and they have a URL. However, the inclusion of a business on an MSB registrant search webpage is not a recommendation, certification of legitimacy, or endorsement of the business by any government agency. What? So you're telling me not to interact, but if I do, check with this website first, but if they're there, it still may not mean jack. And it says, beware of financial services that do not ask for KYC information, including name, date of birth, address, and ID before allowing you to send or receive money or cryptocurrency. Okay. We're just blanketing everything, right? There are so many different types of definitions of cryptocurrencies, between property, between securities, and it could be data sitting on a blockchain. Understand that just because an app can be found in an app store does not necessarily mean it is a legal service and is complying with federal requirements. Avoid using services that advertise themselves for illegal purposes. So that's where they're taking a jab at Samurai Wallet. Be cautious when using cryptocurrency services known to be used by criminals to launder their funds. Well, that's everything. Here's the thing, right? Just like cash, anything that has the least amount of friction to use or adds layers of privacy is going to be desired by people who want privacy and will also be utilized by people who are committing crime. Just like most drug dealers accept cash. So, yes, if they're also accepting Bitcoin, they're also going to look for ways to clean it or to disassociate themselves from the previous transactions, because the people they accepted the Bitcoin from bought drugs from them, which means they probably bought drugs from other people. And those UTXOs follow the XPub. The XPub is basically a long string. It can be an identifier back to the original source. And, there could be multiple Bitcoin addresses in an XPub, but they all have an association to each other. And so this is what gets altered, the outputs of your Bitcoin when you're using a mixer get altered in a way that make it, I won't say impossible, because I don't know what impossible looks like a year or two from now, but makes it very difficult to track the Bitcoin moving forward, right? You can track it up to a certain point, and then you're like, I kind of went off the radar, right? Well, I like that, actually. I need that. I rely on that. Well, so do drug dealers. So there's been some research that I've seen in the last few days that actually analyzed some of those originating transactions from Whirlpool and found less than 5% to be associated with blacklists that were associated with criminal activity, meaning the majority were not using it for criminal intent, probably just trying to be private and break a piece off and use it to spend without having to worry about wherever it goes, you know, with them seeing what their entire stack is. So what I'm, you know, I hear a lot of rhetoric. Well, they're just trying to get the bad guys. Well, we're going to talk about that too, going into section 702 later, because we're all bad guys now and we're all going to be criminals if they keep pushing forward with all of this, unless you comply. Because this is just up till the last couple days, okay? So now, so right after this, Phoenix Wallet, probably arguably one of the best Lightning wallets available to us in the United States, pulls their app off the App Store. They're like, peace out, we're not doing this, okay? I'm not really going to make any comments about it because that's a business decision. Businesses do what they need to do. And it sucks to see these things happen. But at the same time, like, they're going to do what they do. So so they decided, hey, it's a good business decision. Let's pull out before. Which some people would say, that looks like maybe a potential admission of guilt. And others say, like, no, I don't think so. I think they're, when I say the other people, I'm talking about the conversations I've just had in the last 48 to 72 hours. Probably accumulating like 12 hours of conversations and podcasting, right? And so when I say people, I'm talking about people that are participating in these Twitter spaces that are saying, you know, some are saying, oh, you know, they're just trying to catch the bad guys. And then others are saying, no, it's just a sweeping change. And they're ultimately trying to push everyone to use KYC, custodial wallets only. I agree with the latter. I think that's ultimately the desire for the federal government in the United States to make it very difficult or illegal to use and transfer Bitcoin in any fashion, whether it's on-chain, Lightning, Liquid, that they want it to only happen through custodial wallets that can be monitored and that can be tracked for whatever purposes they want. So the next day after the release comes out, Phoenix Wallet removes from the App Store after the Samurai crackdown. So Phoenix Wallet, a non-custodial Bitcoin Lightning wallet, has announced that it's being removed from US-based app stores and encouraged users to make sure to empty their wallets. So if you had any Lightning channels open and things like that, they want you to close those. And I think it will be removed on May 4th, I believe. It says this decision must have been made by Async, which is the company behind Phoenix Wallet. And it stated in a tweet that recent announcements from U.S. authorities cast a doubt on whether self-custodial wallet providers, Lightning service providers, or even Lightning nodes could be considered money service businesses and be regulated as such. Interesting. And then also, I'll get to it in a second, there's more information that has come out from the Tornado Cash case that definitely reinforces what they're worried about. And so in light of that, operating a business in the United States where you have a different regulate, you know, you have a lot of things to manage if you want to avoid jail, they have to comply with. So I think they're just preempting that. So that happened. And then also today, Wasabi, same thing. They're leaving, and we'll get to like what you can use here in a second, but they're leaving. But it does stoke the question of like, okay, so now we're moving into this space about what is a security, what is currency, what is property? It's very confusing. So let's talk about MetaMask for a second. I have a MetaMask. I'm sure a lot of people have MetaMask, which is a very simple wallet that you can install as a browser extension and or an app and access funds from Ethereum network and ERC20 tokens. And there's a lot of different things you can do with this wallet. So They're kind of fighting back to because they've been targeted now by the SEC as potentially being, you know, a broker, an unlicensed broker is what they're going after for them. And so Consensus is the company, I believe that is the developer for MetaMask, is suing the SEC over unlawful seizure of authority over Ethereum. So now we're bringing Ethereum into this, not just Bitcoin. And so this is a CoinDesk article, which I'll have linked in the show notes. Ethereum developer Consensus has filed a lawsuit. This is dated April 25th, so 2 days ago. Filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, striking back against what the company calls an unlawful seizure of authority over Ethereum by the federal regulator. It says the company wants a federal court to declare that ETH is not a security. Any investigation of Consensus based on the idea that ETH is a security would violate the company's Fifth Amendment right and Administrative Procedures Act. That MetaMask is not a broker under federal law, that MetaMask's staking service is not violating security laws, and an injunction against the SEC investigating or bringing an enforcement action tied to MetaMask swaps or staking functions. So in the complaint filed, the lawsuit, Thursday against the SEC, all five of its commissioners, Consensus revealed it received a Wells notice, which is a notice from the SEC, on April 10th, indicating that the intention of bringing enforcement actions against them for violating security laws with MetaMask as a product acting as an unlicensed broker. And Consensus denies that it acts as a broker, stating that the wallet is simply an interface and neither holds customer digital assets nor carries out any transaction functions, which is true. That's all done on the network with smart contracts. So, I don't expect everyone to be as knowledgeable about these as I do, because I've kind of been heavy in the space since 2016 and been mining, and I did a lot of trading back in the day. And, I've just been kind of engrossed in the space for what is almost eight years now. And so I'm familiar with how these things work. But Ethereum works with smart contracts on different types of networks. ERC-20 tokens were kind of a big hype in 2017 and 18 with ICOs and some shenanigans and all that kind of stuff, which basically allowed projects to mint coins on their blockchain, and they would be tied to your wallet as a smart contract for doing an ICO. ICOs were typically done in Ethereum. So like, let's say you were trying, it's kind of like a fundraising round, but done in cryptocurrency. But what MetaMask is saying is true. Like, they don't actually hold anything. They just have a software for you to like manage your wallets and connect and see which contracts are open, which are closed, which ones have funds. And then you can move them to other wallets from there, but they're never holding anything. So they're not even brokering anything. They're just facilitating the software. The government is attacking code at this point. And so now MetaMask is tied up in this. So we've got Samurai Wallet in jail and being indicted. Phoenix Wallet's out. Wasabi Wallet's out. MetaMask got a Wells letter on April 10th. They filed a complaint against the SEC on the 25th. These cases will be paramount for all of our futures as it pertains to not just Bitcoin, but what constitutes being a money transmittal business. Because depending upon the rulings of these, whether it's a ruling or determination by jury, will set the precedent for everything going forward. This includes Lightning node operators like myself, potentially miners, because if you're mining, you have a piece of software running on your computer. And whether you have a server, whether it's a desktop and you're just running like NiceHash or something like that, and you get funds transferred to your wallet, a non-KYC wallet that you have, that could be considered both money laundering and illicit activity and a money transfer business transaction. And if you don't have a license, you know, because if you receive that wallet, you receive that transaction to your wallet and you send it to another one, you're a money transmitter. If you're listening to this podcast right now on a 2.0 app like Fountain, and you hit the heart and it automatically boosts me, you know, 100 sats, 500 sats, 1,000 sats, whatever, you're now a money transmitter. And if I take that and I send it to another wallet, I'm a money transmitter. Like your mom's a transmitter. Everyone's a transmitter, right? Like, how do you... And the thing is, we're also now looking at Bitcoin as not an asset or property, but currency under that ruling or under that outcome. And so I think this FBI notice, I think all of this was kind of staged and planned as far as a sequence of events, right? Now, they didn't control whether or not Phoenix Wallet was going to pull or Wasabi, but they could probably imagine that they'd create enough fear and uncertainty within the market for businesses who are operating in the United States to be like, peace out. We ain't even going to deal with this drama. I don't want to know part of this. We're out of here. Like it, don't like it, it doesn't matter. They can do whatever the hell they want. The bigger picture here is the overreach and not even just regulation, but bending and changing terminology and definitions in real time. And here's the crazy thing. The Samurai wallet dev teams also received a Wells notice. And they responded and had it what they thought, you know, was like, hey, we're responding to this. Let's, you know, let's have a conversation. But there was none. They just were arrested. The servers were taken down. Now, were they Yahoos on Twitter? Were they trolls? Did they say, welcome, you know, Russian oligarchs to Samurai Wallet? Did they say stupid things? Definitely they did. So did they make themselves a higher profile target? Probably. Does it mean, though, that they're guilty of the things that they're being accused of? Like them, hate them, look at this as a separate situation, because depending upon how that is determined could impact everyone who is in the space in any capacity using Lightning, using Bitcoin, transferring Bitcoin to a self-custodial wallet or a non-custodial wallet that only you have the keys to. You buy Bitcoin on Strike and you want to send it to a wallet you manage in case Strike ever goes down, because then those funds are gone, right? So this is just common sense. Not to mention, not your keys, not your funds, not your keys, not your Bitcoin. Just like, you know, not your server, not your data. We've talked about this with third-party doctrine and the Fourth Amendment in the United States. But beyond that, what if something happens and they go down? So the reason why Whirlpool doesn't work is because they had a central server acting as a coordinator to coordinate the five individuals that wanted to enter a coin join. And so if you were using a Samurai wallet without your own Dojo server running on your, you know, that you were connecting to, and you were using Samurai wallets, it's very, very likely that your XPubs are exposed. And I would highly recommend, first of all, moving those funds out of Samurai wallet, because the wallet's been taken down. You're not going to get any updates. You can do this very easily, moving it over to something like Sparrow wallet with your seed phrase and your passphrase. And yes, you can recover anything that was in a pre-mix or a post-mix or sitting in your wallet. All of your funds are safe. Why? Because it's non-custodial. You have the keys. They never left your domain, your purview. So where are we at with this now is, well, we're going to have to see how this plays out, how the indictment goes, if it goes to a trial, what the jury finds. I mean, you know, there's a lot more questions than answers right now, and I don't have all the answers. I'm trying to stay abreast of the situation, and I will definitely keep you informed. If there's like micro stories over the next few weeks, I think I'll just do those as quick little clips, maybe 5, 10, 15 minute clips that I won't put on the main podcast feed, but I'll put somewhere. And if I put them on Patreon, you don't necessarily even have to go to Patreon. I can publish an RSS feed for those podcasts. It's just an easy way for me. Unless someone has the time to build something out for me, this is what I'm going to do at the moment. I know a lot of people are going to roll their eyes, like, I don't want to subscribe to an RSS feed on Patreon. Well, you don't have to, but for the moment, that's probably what I'm going to do. because it adds value to the people who are giving me value. That's why I'm doing that. That's why I'm putting it there. But you don't have to be a paid Patreon member to utilize or access that information. So I'm probably going to do that. And at least in the short term, I mean, long term, I do plan to kind of build this out into a way that doesn't rely on third parties like Patreon and KYCing stuff to become a paying member and supporting. But we only got a couple anyway, so I'm not really worried about it. And if I, unless I see a lot of people, like 20 people say, I'd support you, but I don't want to sign up with Patreon. Okay, but that hasn't come yet. So until then, I'm just going to keep doing what I do because I just don't have the bandwidth for it. So today Znacks released this article about Wasabi, you know, wallet, basically effective immediately and until further notice. ZKSnacks is now blocking U.S. citizens, residents from visiting websites, downloading and using Wasabi wallet and related products and services, including APIs and RPC interface. RPC interface is how you connect to their servers from the wallet. So you can run your own Lightning node, you can run your own Bitcoin node and run your own RPC service, connect your own wallet to your own server. That's how I recommend to use Bitcoin. Enter it slowly. Understand how it works. Don't be afraid of technology, right? Anytime you've had to troubleshoot something, like if you've taken a stab at your car and you pop the hood and you're like, okay, I don't know how I'm going to replace my water pump, right? You're not a mechanic, but what do? You go on YouTube and you figure it out and then you do it. You buy the parts and you install it. You change them out. It's important to not be afraid to learn some technical shit in order to be sovereign and in order to avoid exposure and risk from a lot of these, you know, events that could be happening. Don't rely on just third-party developers and projects for storing things like your funds or relying on them in a way that you can't undo it or get out of it. I really want to implore people, run nodes, man. Run your server. It's easy. Casa OS, Umbral, Start 9. These are things are easy. Literally, get your teenager to set it up for you. It's fun. It's open source. And it gives you a sense of feeling and connection to like the larger network and the larger community, both in the open source space. And even if you're not into Bitcoin, that's okay. I'm not trying to preach. I'm not trying to advocate people like, if you're not into it, I get it. But these things that are happening, these events, the change of terminology and transmitting funds and all these different things matter how this looks going forward. So we're just over an hour. I'm going to get into the last part of this, which is the Section 702 of the FISA authorization for surveillance that was due to expire, I believe, on April 19th. Don't quote me on that for sure. I have my notes somewhere and I just can't find it. But I think it was due to expire April 19th. And so the U.S. House passes a FISA Section 702 reauthorization for 2 years. Reforming Intelligence and Security of America Act is what it stands for 2 years through April of 2026. The ACLU and its partners will, you know, work until then to ensure Congress is, you know, finally able to address the severe longstanding constitutional problems with this authority. But I want to read you an article. It's very quick, called The Patriot Act 2.0, who was written by Michelle Weekly, who I'm hoping to have on the podcast in the next couple of weeks. And I'm also planning to have a different guest on, one of your favorites, next week. We've got that on the calendar. So the next couple episodes will be having guests on, but Michelle Weekly, hopefully I can get her on. This is under the legal category. She wrote this article on Bitcoin Magazine. But even though it's on Bitcoin Magazine, we're really not talking about Bitcoin at this moment. We're talking about Section 702. So Edward Snowden is called the recent renewal of the FISA 702 the biggest encroachment on your privacy rights since the Patriot Act, hence the article Patriot Act 2.0. In the middle of the night, right? Like it was a Friday night. I think Schumer was like, oh, we're going to be here all weekend, if I remember reading some other articles, and ended up, you know, blowing through and getting it signed by President Joe Biden in the United States, like kind of in the middle of the night kind of thing. So in the middle of the night, in secret, the U.S. Senate voted to renew FISA Section 702 is a part of a broader bill called the Reforming Intelligence and Securing America Act. So this is RISA, or RISA, R-I-S-S-A, House H.R. Bill 7888. Yeah, kind of like 33, the sequence of numbers. The bill had passed through the House the week prior and was set to be voted on Wednesday, but the vote was delayed. As Friday came and went, it appeared that we, the people, might have another weekend to rally against the Senate vote. Alas, Americans woke up Saturday morning to find that the vote had taken place overnight and was signed into law over the weekend. Mainstream media would have you believe that the bill is vital for national security and that the United States was in immediate and dire need of warrantless spying powers. The New York Times published an article titled "Government Surveillance, Keep Us Safe." There is, of course, much more to the story. Many members of the Senate were told by the House Intelligence Committee that the urgent vote was vital for national security, but they were not told that FISA had already granted approval for Section 702 surveillance to continue until April 2025, even if the bill expired. So the vote was held under the presence of this blatant lie, essentially. So warrantless spying not only lives, but it expands, right? We're going to talk about that. And the only real, like, outspoken individual speaking out against it was Senator Ron Wyden. You know, the bill presented one of the most dramatic and terrifying expansions of government surveillance authority in history. He'll do everything in his power to stop it, which he did. And I watched some sound bites of his speech in front of the House. But obviously this thing passed, and I think it passed. I have the numbers. I think it passed like 80. I have one other last cool thing to tell you later in just a second. But I think it was like a 60-70 kind of, I don't know. I think the numbers are in here in a second. We'll get to it. It says the bill didn't just renew the FISA provisions, which provides targeted warrantless spying powers to the administrative state. It also greatly expanded those powers by changing a few of the key definitions. The amended provision will allow government to require everyday Americans and regular businesses to spy on each other, fellow citizens, effectively turning everyone into a spy. So with the new provision in place, FISA courts can now compel anyone with access to communications equipment to cooperate with the NSA in collecting messages and communications. So previously, the state statute only authorized the collection of data and communications stored by U.S. internet service providers like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, or telco companies like AT&T and Verizon, ISPs, that kind of thing. But with the new rules in place, nearly anyone, with few exceptions, can be compelled to access and turn over your data, giving U.S. intelligence agencies extensive new powers. So Senator Ron Wyden, addressing the Senate floor, points out that the new powers could, for example, by forcing an employee to insert a USB thumb drive into a server at an office they clean or guard at night. Like, anyone, so that's what they mean. Anyone with access could be compelled under Section 702 to commit espionage, to commit like trade secrets and anything. I mean, this is gross. Like, this is, and this all happened in the last week. It's all happened in the last week. Can you see why I'm having a complete meltdown over here? I'm trying to keep it together. I got one good piece of news I'm gonna end on. So it must be considered how Bitcoin and crypto companies could now be compelled to turn over full access to their records of every transaction ever facilitated. While such access already exists under the BSA regulations, there are still some checks and balances in place providing transparency to the process. So this is not only the case with FISA court process, but furthermore, a case potentially could be made that new regulations define node runners, like me, a Bitcoin node or any other type of node, Monero node, as facilitators of communication. Oh, I also run a SimpleX server. I also run a Nostr relay in my house. So could I be compelled to hand over server logs and things of that nature, because I'm now a communication so now I'm not only just a money transmitter, I'm also a communications provider that could be compelled under this Section 702 expansion to give information on my own server and my own house. What the F, man? So node runners, facilitators of communication, opening up anyone running a Bitcoin node to a threat of participation with the secret courts. Do you see how all this dovetails together? So the RISA, RISAA, renewal of FISA's Section 702 not only abolishes the Fourth Amendment rights of U.S. citizens, it's also being used to bypass First Amendment rights. So a report from 2023, for example, and I'll have all the links to this in the show notes, for example, showed that the FBI used Section 02 to spy on protesters and journalists. And the FBI abused the authority of Section 02 on over 300,000 people throughout 2020 and 2021. Abused. Because this is dragnet surveillance. This isn't targeted surveillance. It's dragnet, right? So you just get swept up in it. And then you're getting scored in a database, and you're being linked and profiled. Profiles are being created. So the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978, FISA, was originally acted to provide judicial and congressional oversight of foreign intelligence surveillance activities while maintaining the secrecy and necessary to effectively monitor national security threats. And in 2016, I was watching a talk about the FISA, a renewal, and at that time, which I didn't post in here and I wasn't going to play here, but they were still putting the emphasis on foreign intelligence on foreign nationals, but not on U.S. citizens at all, even if U.S. citizens were out of the country. But the thing is, they can't distinguish the difference based upon their techniques and methods for scraping and harvesting this data, especially if they're also now pulling it from private companies. Now they can compel people to pull it. They can pull it from your server in your house. Like, what the F, dude? We got to have some safeguards in place. That's one of the things that I'm going to be talking about in future episodes, is safeguarding your servers. So the U.S. Patriot Act first passed in 2001. This came after the dawn of 9/11, and reauthorized in 2006, expanded FISA to allow the government to obtain personal records of ordinary Americans from libraries and internet service providers, anywhere with no connection to terrorism, by the way. Zero. Full surveillance. So Section 702 is a key provision of the FISA Amendments Act of 2008. So the 2024 renewal just happened. I mean, it's still warm off the printer. A FISA Section 702 extends the provision for 2 years under the new definitions. Even though the original, So it's vital that anyone who cares about their right to privacy or about your First or Fourth Amendment rights as citizens of the United States, and I know a lot of you are not, but the ones that are not, don't think that your governments aren't looking at what other Western countries are doing in the EU, in the UK, in the United States, and in Canada, and going like, huh, that worked there. We should do that here, right? El Salvador, I see a lot of people saying, like, oh, yeah, move to El Salvador. It's great, man. Bitcoin and 0% tax on businesses. And that might be true. That might be great. But there's also still centralization of, like, their government, I think it's called Chivo wallets, that got hacked and all the source code dumped, including doxing, like, 5 million people. So just because, things look greener doesn't mean they always are. I know a lot of people will be like, well, I'm not in the U.S. This doesn't apply to me. Not yet, but there's also a lot of intercooperation with these governments. It's not really just countries siloed anymore. They work together. Again, the Samurai Wallet guys, servers shut down in Iceland, arrested in Portugal, arrested in Pennsylvania at the same time. These are coordinated efforts. These are government coordinated efforts. India, you've got your own battles you're fighting right now with communications, with VPN services that you can or cannot use that without KYC. KYC is kind of the common primary key linked to a lot of the topics that I'm talking about and that what people are talking about in different spaces, as it pertains to your internet traffic, your mobile device, your financials, and now your crypto. when I say crypto, I'm kind of a Bitcoin maxi. I just also like to date Monero. So I know I can't be a Bitcoin maxi. I can't call myself that. If I also love Monero, have Monero, use Monero. So F off. I do what I want, right? But, you know, there's a reason and there's a use case. So when I say crypto, for me, crypto is just those two. For you, it might be something else. And you know what? That's cool. That's your prerogative. I'm not gonna shit on you for using altcoins and other means and other utilities that benefit you. I'm not gonna do that. But you know, this is basically a consistent term, KYC, that is globally understood, right? And if you're in another country and you want to provide a service that is available to U.S. citizens, you are burdened with understanding and operating within the AML anti-money laundering laws and solving the KYC problem if you don't want to be targeted. And you don't necessarily have to be in the United States to do that. You could just be servicing U.S. customers by having their app available to them or not blocking them. So this does expand, and they will come get you. Doesn't matter if you're in South America, they'll come get you. Like, I know people are like, oh, I'm sitting behind my keyboard, I'm in Belarus. Yeah, probably won't get you if you're in Russia. But if you're in cooperating government jurisdictions and where they have extradition, guess what? If you're doing this, so what does that mean? Could that mean if you have a lightning channel open from Ecuador to the US? Not Ecuador, we'll pick, I don't know, let's pick Panama. I don't know, just anywhere. Does that mean that you are violating money transmission laws in the United States and could be targeted? Maybe, right? So I've heard this. I've heard this. I was actually I was on a Twitter session yesterday. The host was out of Istanbul, and you know, I heard him saying, and that's fine. I heard him saying, well, this is a US problem. It's not my problem. Yeah, for now, you're right. It is. It is a US problem. But these problems have tentacles that reach into everywhere around the globe. And if all the liquidity and all the nodes and all that stuff, all the mining goes out of the US, sure, the market demand will welcome them somewhere else. But that will put a major damper on the stability of Bitcoin, because a lot of Bitcoin businesses and tools, the developers are in the US. So a lot of the things that have been created, not all of them, but not all of them, but a lot of them have been developed in the United States. So that means potentially software engineers could be targeted, their communique surveilled to see like, hey, did these guys have a troll conversation about how, you know, Russian oligarchs could be using their service? That could be used against you. And now with the expansion of 702, another employee could be narking on you, or they might be compelled to narc on you in this space. Your neighbor could be compelled, if you've ever had a conversation around the barbecue, that you run a Bitcoin node and you use Lightning channels and, you know, how cool it is. Huh? Really? You know, it's like walking the line between good OPSEC, but also just living your life and sharing and spreading the good word about, about Bitcoin. And what kills me is that Bitcoin has become so valuable globally because of its utility and its the decentralized nature. And it's because of that and the work over the last 15 years that has made it, given it value go up kind of price on Wall Street and now with ETFs. And then you see people like Michael Saylor, you know, 200,000 plus coins, and people say, oh, he's great for Bitcoin. He's brought a lot of exposure from big money. And I look at it as consolidation of wealth. And, you know, I don't have a problem with Michael Saylor personally. I don't really care. But what I'm saying is I see this glorification of Wall Street and investment bankers and investors, but not so much on the developers and the people who have actually put in the time and trying to problem solve and scale the network and scale transactions. And yes, layer two Litecoin has issues. It's kind of the best, though, for doing instant transactions, transacting with Bitcoin, and it works. Everything can be improved, right? My point is that these Wall Street types don't seem to be wanting to engage or protect the ethos of what Bitcoin actually is and what's made it so valuable. They're only interested in number go up and stacking, not participating, but just using it as a way to hedge inflation. So I kind of have like my own personal issues with how people with that claim to be in the space, or air quotes Bitcoiners, who say, well, I just love Bitcoin, I buy it, I sit on it, I hodl it. I mean, that's cool, but are you also contributing to making it better? Because if you do, what you're hodling will just continue going up. And that doesn't necessarily just mean technical and running a node, and I mean, those things are great, but also means writing your congressman, writing your senator, calling them and saying, yo, this is not cool. I saw how you voted for this, and I also saw how you voted for Section 02 for the FISA expansion. I want to sit down with you. I want you to explain yourself, right? Because if you're there to do what's best for your constituents and uphold the Constitution, like, you're failing miserably, and I want to have a conversation with you. If you're a Bitcoiner and you're not running a node and you're not opening channels and you're not donating to development, I hope you're doing that. I hope you're doing that. Because for me, that's where the most value is, and the most valuable assets. And now, if you're a developer, you're thinking twice about writing code to benefit the network, or write a wallet, because now you might be charged for creating a money laundering service, potentially, or acting as an unlicensed broker or an unlicensed money transfer business, service business, an MSB. So a lot of things to consider here. If you're abroad and you are potentially thinking of like, hey, this would be a great app. This would be a great solution. I think everyone in the Western civilized world would use it. I also think everyone in third world countries would use this. This is great. You may have to rethink that. You may have to rethink your strategy. So this is so much bigger than just some samurai wallet, Yahoos, Bing Yahoos. And don't get me wrong. I like the guys. I like trolls though. So, but you can hate them and that's okay. You can hate them for being morons and saying stupid shit on Twitter, but we all say stupid shit. We also say they're just really good. They're just better at trolling than most people. And I'm not saying they should have done it. They shouldn't have. And I'm sure they're fucking regretting it now. Sorry, my language. Sorry, I didn't mean to slip into there. But ultimately, what's happening to them will happen to other people that aren't Yahoos, that aren't trolls, that are following the guidelines as best they can. But the guidelines are changing. The terminology is changing. The definitions are changing. And it's all happening in real time this freaking week. And I expect to see, I hope not, but I do expect to see more things happen. I worry about BTC Pay Server. It's a big one. No one's even mentioned it. BTC Pay Server allows you to install invoicing software on your own server for e-commerce. Well, that technically would be, by these definitions, a money transfer business, because you're requesting, you have an invoice to request funds in exchange for product or service or a donation or a nonprofit donation. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, how are these things going to be defined? And me, I use BTC Pay Server. I run Lightning Node with open channels and provide liquidity to keep the pool strong, to allow people to use the network. I run a Bitcoin miner actively. It's running right now in the other room. You can probably hear the damn fan because it's loud as shit. I've ran other miners for years. So all of these things that I'm just saying I'm doing could potentially, put me in the pathway to be charged, right? Unless I shut it down. So one last cool thing is that I wanted to share is Oklahoma, of all states. It's kind of cool. Passed a bill, 80-1. It's been kind of called the Bitcoin bill, to protect fundamentals in the state. So let me actually, and this was tweeted out by Dennis Porter. Let me actually bring this article back. Actually, I'm just going to bring up his tweet, and I'll have a link to the article too. But he had everything bulleted out the way that I liked it. Oh, it's right here. I already had the tab open. I'm an idiot. Here we go. So some good news. I don't want to end everything on like a ugly note, but massive breaking news. So a bill to protect fundamental Bitcoin rights has passed the Senate and House in the state of Oklahoma. 80-1. We got to figure out who the one is. Hopefully, I'll have their information. I can let everyone know. So these preserve the right to self custody, the right to mine, the right to run a full node, and the right to buy, sell, trade digital assets. So, Representative Brian Hill, his Twitter handle is Samuel Brian Hill, and Senator Bill Coleman sponsored the bill, and without their support, it looks like it wouldn't have probably pushed through legislation. So if you're a Bitcoin business operating in Oklahoma, be sure to support them. But this protection of self-custody is huge. And there's a lot, he says there's a lot of reasons to support this piece of legislation, but given recent attempts to attack self-custody, there has never been more important time to defend this inalienable right. He says the very idea that we the people cannot hold our own assets is antithetical to what it means to be an American. Anti-ethical. And I cannot say that word. I'm sorry. I sound like an idiot. I got blurry vision. I've been reading monitors and screens for like hundreds of hours this week, and I really should go touch grass and take a break. I actually had a plan to go camping today, but the weather's shit, so I decided to do the podcast because I really needed to do this anyway. But this is the kind of thing that we need. We need to be impressing upon our regulators at the state level, especially, that this is the kind of protection that we desire and that they owe to listen to us as representatives. So, excuse me. So I'm going to take a sip of my water here. I've been talking like crazy. So Bitcoin wallets that I recommend if you are had Samurai Wallet and you had funds in there. Sparrow Wallet would probably be number one. I'm also now I'm using Mutiny wallets. I'm moving away from Phoenix for obvious reasons. I think you have to like May 4th to get your closer channels, get your funds out. And I'm also experimenting with Fediments. Fediments is kind of interesting. I'm not going to get too deep into it on this episode, but I will talk about it in the future because I'm just trying it out right now. But it's a collaborative, multi-sig, federated group. So like we could have our own Fediment, like our own podcast crew could have our own Fediment where we basically can communicate. We can, we're basically putting our money into a pool, our Bitcoin. And when you transact, it can happen on Lightning. It can happen on Liquid. It could happen on Bitcoin. And it's basically obfuscating which funds were being sent and breaking the chain, but no one can see. Even in the guardian of the Federation can't see funds or transactions. So it is a trustless co-op that protects your privacy. And I really like it so far. I think it's really cool. I'm not recommending it just yet or anything like that. I want to understand it deeper. And for those that did use CoinJoin service like Whirlpool for Samurai Wallet or Wasabi, I'm actually just this week set up a jam server for CoinJoin, which is a completely decentralized platform. BTC Sessions has a fantastic video on setting that up. It's very easy to do on your own server. It can be done on Start9 server. It can be done on Umbral. Umbral's kind of, really evolved over the last year or two. And so I run Umbral, I run Start9, I run Casa OS, I run them all because I want to know how they all work and I want to know what to recommend to people depending upon what they're trying to accomplish. My experience with it so far has been good. So I'm going to be using that. So the Jam Marketplace, and I'm going to be using the Fediments, which is basically just an app and, you do everything through the app and it's very sophisticated. You can even do offline transactions, receiving offline transactions and see your balance update in real time. So if you're one of those people that likes to keep your phone in airplane mode, turn off your Wi-Fi, turn off your cell connections, you can actually still use this. You could use it as a terminal, for accepting, Bitcoin for services and products. So, okay, we're at an hour and a half. I hope this was a good one. I had a completely different podcast planned and all my notes and everything were for that. But with everything that had happened this week, I kind of just changed gears, and this is where we're at right now. So next week, planning on having someone on the show. I don't want to give it away yet because I think it's kind of fun when he's on here. Everyone knows who he is. And hopefully the following week or week after, I will get Michelle Weekly on, who has she works in the Bitcoin space. She works in the Bitcoin business space. She's also very adamant and well-read within violations to our privacy via surveillance. That actual article that I read from Bitcoin Magazine was from her. That'll be linked in the description. I feel like I'm missing something, but I'm mentally exhausted, so I think I've got everything covered. I hope you all are having a great week. If you want to join us in the Matrix channel, just go to download Element app, go to closednetwork.io, click join our Mastodon server. We also have an off-topic channel. Check out the forum. Please support and donate if you feel compelled. If you don't have the means, that's cool. Maybe you can contribute in other ways. I'll be working on some merch and some content and media and videos, trying to do everything. I'm not doing them all very well, but I'm trying to get better. So, I mean, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it, y'all. I will catch you on the next one. This is episode 33. Simon, out. I bet when I land, they gon' tell me it's luck again. See that I'm winning, it's harder to watch. I'm setting the stage, you should give me my prize. You ain't got a soul, you lacking the spirit. You talk out your neck, I'ma show you I'm with it. I've been really happy for you to sit and watch me win again and win again and win again. I know it's probably getting on me and win again.